I probably need to get to the sermon. I hadn't preached in a long time, so there's no telling how long this may go. We live in a time that I think we understand there's just not a whole lot of respect for the marriage relationship anymore. Many people really just kind of make a mockery of marriage. And that's done in a lot of different ways. Some people might make a mockery of marriage by not marrying. And it's not as if they don't want to be in the relationship and enjoy the companionship, but so many people see marriage as a foolish thing. It's an unnecessary commitment that just complicates things. And so some people just choose to not even honor the marriage relationship to start with. Some are okay with getting married, but they enter into the relationship thinking if this doesn't work out, we'll just divorce and go our separate ways and we'll start all over again with somebody else. Others may have been married for a long time, and maybe they even have some level of commitment to stay married, but somewhere along the way, they just bring things into the marriage relationship that shows you they've just really lost a respect for it. Many people might be married, but the marriage is not good, and they just don't care enough about it. They don't value the relationship enough to put in the work that's going to make it good. Of course, there are a lot of other evidences that marriage is not really respected, and we understand that. But as Christians, though, hopefully we understand. Hopefully we see the problems with all of these attitudes towards marriage, with this mockery that some make out of marriage. Hopefully we see that from the Bible, marriage is a serious relationship. It's not at all something God designed to just be casual. It's not something that God designed for us to just get into and then have an easy out just in case it doesn't work the way that we wanted it to. And certainly God didn't include marriage to be some enslavery to a relationship in which we're not really happy. And so if we understand how serious God is about not only us being married, but making our marriages good marriages, if we understand that, I think that warrants a special look on a regular basis at our marriages to make sure they are what God wants us or wants our marriages to look like. And for that reason, this morning, I want to talk about just one aspect of marriage. I want to talk about purity in our marriages. There is no doubt that sexual immorality of all kinds has been the demise of many marriages. We live in a world where immorality is all around us, and we see that creep into not just marriages in the world, we see that creep into even Christian marriages. And so I think it's important for us as children of God to learn how to safeguard our marriages. When I talk about immorality, impurity in marriage, maybe the first thing that comes to your mind is adultery, and certainly that's maybe one of the most evident acts of impurity in a marriage. But I want you to understand that is not the only way a marriage can have impurity in it or immorality in it. There are other things brought into marriage. There are addictions to things like pornography. That is a plague that is just running rampant through our country right now, and it is tearing marriages apart. There are other things like just one person in a marriage bringing another person into their life, maybe just in a very casual relationship, and maybe it hasn't turned physical yet. But there's an opportunity for it too. So I just want you to understand that impurity in marriage can exist well before the physical act of being engaged with another person. And there are a lot of different reasons why impurity might find its way into a marriage. Maybe because one of the spouse's needs are not being met. Maybe their physical needs are not being met, or maybe their emotional needs, or perhaps both of those are just not being met. And maybe the person that's neglecting their spouse, maybe they're not even really aware of it. Maybe there's just been a breakdown in communication and they just don't understand what their spouse's needs are. And so you may have a husband or a wife thinking, well, I'm being everything that my wife needs me to be. I'm providing her with all that she should ever want, all that she would ever need. And all the while he's assuming that, she's left wanting because he doesn't really understand her needs. It might be more of a selfish thing. Maybe a husband or a wife spends all of their time immersed in a career, or they're immersed in a hobby or spending time with other friends, and their spouse is being neglected. Their needs are not being met. Maybe there's stress in the relationship. I don't know of anybody that goes through life and doesn't understand this idea of stress. And it's especially evident sometimes in marriages. There may be a financial stress. There may be stress with children or or something else coming in. You may have inherited aging parents, and now you have to take care of them, and that adds a level of stress. You understand there are a lot of things that can put stress into the marriage relationship. And oftentimes what happens is human nature says, if I'm stressed, I want to find a release for that stress. And sometimes people start looking in a lot of different places to find relief from stress, and oftentimes they look in the wrong places. Selfishness might be the reason why impurity comes into marriage. It might not be that the marriage is bad. Your spouse may not be neglecting you in any way, but you realize there are people who just like the thrill of something new. They just like the thrill of something exciting. And sometimes they just selfishly get involved in impure things, and they introduce that into the marriage relationship just so that they can satisfy some sexual urge or sexual need. And again, there may be a lot of other reasons beyond this why impurity works its way into a marriage. But we understand that there's no desire of God in any of this, that spouses start looking outside of their marriage for fulfillment. When people start looking in the wrong place because of dissatisfaction with their marriage, what they may be thinking is, I'll find some satisfaction, but this is not fixing the problem at all. Not only is a person sinful when they're engaging in these things, but they're just driving a greater wedge in between them and their spouse. And so I think we understand there are a lot of factors. There are a lot of things that try to come into our marriage, and we've got to fight hard sometimes to keep them out. And so I want us to look at some ways to safeguard this morning. And it's going to come from Proverbs chapter 7. I want you to open your Bibles, please, to Proverbs chapter 7. We're going to read all of it. And you'll see this in just a minute when we read Proverbs 7. We don't have a hard time making application from it because it's very practical as it's written. And it's written very specifically to the very thing that we're talking about this morning. So let's read Proverbs 7 together, and then we'll just highlight some of the applications from it. My son, keep my words and treasure my commandments within you. Keep my commandments and live, and my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers, write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your intimate friend, that they may keep you from an adulteress, from the foreigner who flatters with her words. For at the window of my house I looked out through my lattice, and I saw among the naive and discerned among the youths a young man lacking sense, passing through the street near her corner. And he takes the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night, and in the darkness. And behold, a woman comes to meet him, dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. She is boisterous and rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. She is now in the streets, now in the squares, and lurks by every corner. So she seizes him and kisses him, and with a brazen face she says to him, I was due to offer peace offerings. Today I have paid my vows. Therefore I have come out to meet you, to seek your presence earnestly, and I have found you. I spread my couch with coverings, with colored linens of Egypt. I sprinkled my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us drink our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with caresses, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him. At the full moon, he will come home. With her many persuasions, she entices him. With her flattering lips, she seduces him. Suddenly he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as one in the fetters to discipline of a fool. Until an arrow pierces through his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare, so he does not know that it will cost him his life. Now therefore, my sons, listen to me and pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For many are the victims she has cast down, and numerous are all her slain. Her house is the way to Sheol, descending to the chambers of death. I have broken this chapter down into four sections, and I think there's at least a primary application in each of these sections. So let's just kind of talk about those. The first section, I think, is the first seven verses. And I think the wisdom there, the application there is wisdom. It's to be guided by the wisdom of God. And of course, all of the applications really fall under this category of operate under the wisdom of God. But I want you to just notice how much emphasis the writer here puts on wisdom, especially in a situation like this. Wisdom is going to be critical when it comes to a matter of keeping ourselves pure, especially within our marriage. I want you to see how the wisdom that's talked about here is not just some casual knowledge of right and wrong. This is not just some, I know a little bit about what the Bible says about this or about that. I think all of us know and understand we can know the difference between right and wrong, but oftentimes that's not enough to keep you from doing wrong. And so I think wisdom is really expressed here, maybe more so than just a knowledge of right or wrong. And of course, being led by the wisdom of God, that wisdom James calls wisdom from above, well, that would be contrary to or different than what normally leads us. You see, we're normally led by our thoughts, our wants, our impulses, our lusts. But what the wisdom writer here says is don't be led by those things. Rather, be led by the wisdom from God. He says in verse 1 to value wisdom like it's a treasure. All of us would know if we had something that was valuable to us, we would treasure it. We would hold it close to us. We would guard it. And that's what he says to do with wisdom. In verse 2, he says wisdom should be the apple of your eye. That's a statement that we hear sometimes. It's a proverbial statement. And the idea is that it is something precious to you, something that is close to you or valuable to you. In verse 3, he says, bind the commandments on your fingers. Perhaps he's maybe making reference to something like a ring that you would wear on your hands. It's visible at all times. It's something that you can look to. It goes with you everywhere you go. That's the relationship that you ought to have with wisdom. And he says, and then there's the writing of the commandments on the heart. In other words, this is something that lies within you. The fact that it is in the heart means that it is guiding you as you go through life. Verse 4, he says, wisdom, you are my sister. You are understanding is an intimate friend. Again, the idea is that wisdom is close to you, just like a close family relationship or just like the closest of friends. That's what wisdom needs to be to you. He says in verse 5, this is the kind of relationship with wisdom. It's this that will keep you from a relationship with someone like the adulteress. Notice he said in verse 2, do this and you will live. Living is got to be done by wisdom. Of course, that contrasts the way this ends with him costing his life because of what he does. This man finds himself going to this deceitful woman in verse 7. He says he's a naive man. He's either a young man, physically young, or at least he's young in his thinking. He's naive. He's gullible. He is easily persuaded to do something foolish. And so one thing that needs to be abundantly clear to all of us, if we're going to safeguard our marriages, if we're going to safeguard ourselves from making foolish decisions, then we're going to have a tremendous relationship with the wisdom of God. And that's not going to come by listening to the occasional sermon or reading a few pages out of our Bible every week. We're going to have to be committed to know God, to have a relationship with His Word. The desire within us has to be to know the wisdom from above and let that be in our hearts and guide us. And so in your marriage, especially in tough times, maybe you are feeling neglected. Maybe you are feeling like you're trapped in some way. Maybe you feel like you're being stressed or tempted and things are getting really tough. If that is the case, make absolute certain you're not relying on your own thoughts, your own insight, your own impulses. Make certain you are immersing yourself with the wisdom of God. The second section is, as I have divided it, is verses 8 through 14. And I just labeled the application here being perceptive. Starting in verse 8, this young man shows himself to be putting himself in a bad place. I think every indication is that he's going down this street and he knows where he's going. And I think that's indicated by the fact that he goes at nighttime. Notice in the ninth verse, he goes at twilight, at the evening, in the middle of the night, in darkness. He's going so that that darkness will cover where he's going. But I don't have any doubt in my mind. He knows he's taking himself to a place that he shouldn't be going. And if you and I are going to keep our marriages pure, it's going to be imperative that we perceive places we shouldn't go. We have to know that this place is dangerous. For instance, I don't think it's ever a good idea for a married man to be alone with another woman, and vice versa. And that's especially true if your marriage is having trouble. Men, don't find yourself alone with another woman. And wives, don't find yourself alone with another man. This very man walked down a path he knew he shouldn't have been walking down. And when you find yourself alone with another person, just perceive that this is a place that I should not be. Even though being short of being physically involved or physically alone with another person, there's social media. And I don't have to tell you the dangers. I don't have to tell you how social media has opened up so many doors to impurity coming into marriage. It's hard to really kind of get a good grasp on some of the statistics that are out there. But I don't think we have any hard time understanding that there are a lot of people who go through rough spots in their marriage and they start turning to other friends. And they're not necessarily turning to friends in person. Sometimes what they're doing is they're turning to other friends online. And some of these medias allow us to make connections with people. Sometimes it's a stranger, but oftentimes what statistics show are happening are people are running to old acquaintances, old relationships, or someone that they used to have a crush on. And what they're doing is they're now engaging in conversations. And maybe those talks start innocent enough. But you know as well as I do, one thing that starts innocent may very well lead to something much more dangerous. And sometimes you may find yourself being vulnerable and you've opened yourself up to communicating with other people that you shouldn't, because it's just easy to do. Maybe you find yourself with a vulnerable person coming to you, and you realize this man, this woman has reached out to me, and they're engaging in conversations with me and telling me about their lives. And you understand this person is hurting and I'm the person that they're coming to. We need to perceive that there is a danger in that. And so whether we're talking about being in the wrong place physically or maybe even online, we understand when we start involving ourselves in relationships with other people that sometimes conversations gradually get deeper and deeper. And so you may have a husband that feels like, I just can't communicate with my wife anymore. She just doesn't listen to me. She doesn't respond to me. So what does he do? Well, he finds someone that listens. He finds someone that can make big promises and seemingly they can fulfill all of his needs. And a wife may do the same thing. She may feel as if her husband doesn't care. He doesn't listen. He doesn't meet my needs. And online or maybe in person, she finds someone that just does everything that her husband doesn't do. And before you know it, you're now discussing your life. You're discussing intimate things, emotional things with a person that you're not married to. And if you ever get to that point in your marriage where you're confiding in a woman that you're not married to or a man that you're not married to, if you're getting into these deep emotional conversations, if you're getting into conversations that are starting to express themselves in more physical ways, just perceive that you're in a wrong place and you don't need to be there anymore. We also need to perceive the intentions of other people too. It's not just where we are, but we need to perceive. Notice what it says about this woman. It says she's dressed like a harlot. I mean, is there any doubt what her intentions are? Just by the way this woman is dressed, you can tell she doesn't mean good for me. And we need to be able to perceive that when we come across other people in life. Perceive immediately something is not good just by the way this woman is dressed. It says in verse 11, she's loud, she's boisterous. And what that seems to say to me is this woman is crying for attention. Maybe her husband has neglected her. I don't know how long he's been gone on this trip. But perhaps he has left this woman at home and her needs maybe are not being met. And in the absence of her husband, she's out crying for attention by the way that she's dressed, by the way that she's acting. We need to perceive the vulnerability of other people and make sure that we don't take advantage of that either way. This is a woman that wouldn't be hard to take advantage of because she's out there looking for something immoral. We need to perceive that. This woman is bold in that she just kisses him. If you find yourself around a person that's not afraid to be bold in that kind of way, you know. Just perceive you're in a place that you shouldn't be. And one of the maybe the more troubling signs of all in verse 14 is she appears to be a religious woman. What does it say there that she had offered? She had paid her vows? I think sometimes people may have gotten involved in conversations with other people. Maybe they kind of started a little bit of a casual relationship with another person because, well, they're a Christian. There's no danger in me being with this woman because she's a Christian, or there wouldn't be any harm in me being with that man because he's a Christian and we're both Christians. But you see, that doesn't guarantee that a relationship won't go further than it should. And so again, perceive. Perceive when you're in a place you shouldn't be. Perceive when you start having conversations that could lead to something dangerous. The third thing that is... the third section I have labeled verses 16 through 21 is just to use the perspective that wisdom has given you. That's the key. If you have really relied on wisdom, when you go through life, you're going to have a really good perspective. And so use the perspective that we can get. Evaluate everything with good perspective. Notice all of the things that are kind of in play here. The scene is set. Here this woman is making a really strong appeal to the physical senses. In verse 21, it talks about many persuasions with her flattering lips. She's appealing to this man's ego. Everything that is here is just really a facade. It's just really a frivolous attraction. If you just think about this for a minute, if you took away the way that she's dressed, if you took away the fancy linen and the romantic candles, if you were able to discern that the words coming out of her mouth are not really true, they don't really mean anything, all it is some insincere, shallow flattery. She's just blinding you with superficial things so that she can have her way with you. Well, all of this may look appealing and it may sound appealing, but use some good perspective from the wisdom above. Is it worth ruining your marriage to spend a night with someone who can just make things look good for a night? And certainly the answer is no. If you were to take away all of the superficial things here, what you would find is that there's nothing deep and meaningful going on here. These are just two people getting together, and all they're really doing is fulfilling some type of selfish sexual gratification, and that's it. There's nothing deep. There's nothing meaningful. This is just fancy candles and fancy linens because somebody's husband is not home and because another man has strayed down a path he knew he shouldn't have gone down. People, that's not wise. Yet often what we're attracted by is something dressed up to make it look good. And the wisdom writer here says, don't fall for something that's just superficially built up. And so that's a perspective that all married people need to be seeing with. There are going to be occasional problems in every marriage, and those problems need to be worked out. But the answer to your problem, the solution, is not going and finding some temporary gratification. The solution is not finding some man or some woman that's got themselves all dressed up to make a good presentation for just one night. And so use that. The wisdom of God would say, don't endanger your soul. Don't endanger your marriage for something so worthless. There's no value in someone who owns a fancy dress or owns fancy linens. And so if you're ever tempted to start going outside of your marriage because this over here looks good and this over here looks better than what I have right now, closely evaluate what it is. Peel back that facade, and what you'll be able to see is this is really shallow. The fourth application is from those final verses 23 to 27. And it's just know the consequences of what you're doing. This is really similar to just evaluating with good perspective, but I mentioned earlier, I don't have any doubt in my mind, that this man knew what he was doing. He knew where he was going. This man is ignoring higher wisdom. He's ignoring the danger of going where he's going. He goes there at night because he knows he shouldn't be going there, but you know what he does? He goes there anyway. He's not perceiving that all that she's presented to him is just a show. And he's not looking through the perspective of wisdom. He's looking through a fleshly perspective. And what he's doing is he's ignoring everything that's important. And what it says is this will lead you to death. This will cost you your life. Just like he said, it's like an ox that's taken his last walk. He doesn't know he's taken his last walk. But at some point it's made really clear. His life is over. Just like a bird that's free 1 minute and the next thing it's caught in a snare. That's what the wisdom writer warns. Don't ignore the consequences. You see how much trouble we get in when we ignore what we ought to know? We know not to get in the wrong places. We know not to be alone with the wrong people. We know not to engage in certain conversations online. But you know what? Sometimes we do it anyway, and to do it despite knowing better means we're just ignoring the consequences. And so don't do that. Don't ignore what's obvious. Well, let me close with just some very practical applications to just kind of in conjunction with what we've already read, because I think what the proverb writer here does, I think, is very practical. But in conjunction with that, let me just quickly suggest a couple of things that will very practically help us in our marriages. Specifically talking about maintaining purity in them. Just communicate with your spouse. That sounds really simple, but I am convinced there are a lot of husbands and wives that don't just open up and tell their husband or their wife what they need to hear. Make sure you know what your spouse's needs are. And just make certain that there's this open line of communication where if your needs are not being met by your husband or your wife, make certain your relationship is such that you can just say, I'm not getting all that I need from you. Make sure you're comfortable. And let me just tell you, and all of you know this, many of you have been married so much longer than I have, but you realize all of our needs change over time. What used to be appealing and satisfying when we were 20 or 30 or 40, well, that might not be the same thing that appeals to us anymore. And so we have to be in tune with one another. And so let me just encourage you very practically, communicate. Let your spouse know what your needs are. Secondly, just be everything you can be to your spouse. You realize that this woman is out wandering in the streets probably because her husband is not home. And that's not to say a husband can't ever leave his home. Maybe he's gone away on business, and maybe it was a very necessary thing. And the woman doesn't get a pass for being immoral because her husband is gone. But the point is here is a woman that has been neglected in some way, or maybe she feels neglected. And because she feels neglected, she's going out to try to find satisfaction with another man. And so husbands, don't leave your wives in a place where they're not being satisfied by you, where their needs are not being filled by you. Don't give your husband, don't give your wife any reason to go outside of your relationship to get everything they need. You be your spouse's best friend. You be the one that fulfills all of their emotional and physical needs. You be the good listener that your wife needs to be. You be the respecter that a husband needs his wife to be. Don't give your spouse any reason to go outside of your marriage to get anything that they need. Be everything to your husband. Be everything to your wife. And that will cut down on impurity coming into marriage. Be extreme. And this is really tough to do. It's hard, but Jesus himself said extreme things. If your eye is going to cause you to stumble, pluck it out. And if it's a hand or it's a foot, chop it off. And I know we think that Jesus is not talking about physically maiming our bodies, but I'm not so convinced that he's stopping real short of that. The point that Jesus is making is that sin has to be stopped at all costs. And so if you're in a job that puts you in a place with a person that you're growing attracted to, you're having conversations with, you can perceive that this is going to a bad place, you may need to look for a transfer. You may even need to look for another job. But you need to find a way to get out of harm. to get out of danger. Maybe it's online conversations that you're having. Maybe you just kind of reached out to an old flame from the past, and as you're reliving the good memories and what could have been, you come to the conclusion that this is going to a really bad place, and by me having this conversation, I'm being unfaithful to my husband, or I'm being unfaithful to my wife. And if you can't stop that conversation, you might just need to cut the cord. And I know that sounds extreme in our day and time. You mean I don't need to have the internet? I don't need to have a smartphone? I don't need to have all of the social media apps? Well, that might be the case. You might be the only one that doesn't have the internet. And you may not like cutting yourself off, but I'll tell you, if it means saving my soul, I can do without the internet. If it means preserving my marriage, we can do without it. And so don't be afraid to do something extreme to help your marriage, and most importantly, to help your soul. And finally, find help. You may have wandered down some bad paths already. Somebody listening this morning might know, I have introduced impurity into my marriage, and maybe your spouse doesn't even know about it yet. Find help. And they may not be the very first one you need to go to. Maybe you need to confide in one of the elders or somebody else that you trust will give you wisdom and perception from the Word of God. Find help. Find an accountability partner if you need to. But this life is not worth, your pride is not worth losing your marriage. Pride is not worth losing your soul. And so if you find yourself introducing impurity into your marriage, you got to make it stop, and you might not be able to do that on your own. You may need to find somebody that can help you with it. I hope these things will help us understand the necessity to keep our marriages pure, and maybe these are some very practical things that will help us do that. I know this is not a sermon that's really made you just think about your eternal fate, but I think every time we open up a Bible, it's a good idea to conclude with, this life's going to be over one day. Whether we're married, whether we've been good in our marriage or bad in our marriage, it doesn't matter. What matters at the end of life is how we've responded to the words of God. And so you may be in a position this morning that you know, I'm sinful, I'm not right in the eyes of God. Maybe it's because of impurity in marriage, maybe it's for something else, but if you know that your life is not right with God, you've got an opportunity right now to make it right. Maybe you need to respond for the first time, confessing Jesus, committing yourself to make Him the Lord of your life, being baptized, having your sins washed away, leaving you a new person. Perhaps, though, you just need to find help, like I just talked about, and maybe you want prayers by a lot of people at the same time. Maybe you need some arms around you. Maybe you need some shoulders to cry on or some necks to hug. That can be extremely powerful. And so if we can help you this morning in any way, make your life right with God, let me just encourage you to come now as we stand and sing.